I'd like to welcome everyone to Mesa City Council Study Session for Thursday, May 27th, 2010. If you'd bear with me for a minute, I will read the excuses of those who are not here today. No, we'd like to excuse Vice Mayor Jones and Councilmember Fenter, both who are out of town, and Councilmember Summers, who had a work obligation this morning. So it's just four of us. So we'll begin today's meeting with by hearing a presentation on the budget update. Mr. Brady.
Thank you, Mayor.
Glad to see you here.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Everything go okay yesterday? Your son got home and everything?
Yeah, so it was exciting. Very good. Very good. It was very fun. This morning, what we'd like to do is just kind of go through a budget update. This includes some of the items that were included in the proposed budget that we didn't have time to discuss or at least present to the council the last time we were here talking about the budget. And then we also want to bring forward there were some discussions as received some input from council members regarding the budget and some items they wanted to see if we could address. And we have some proposals for addressing some of those programs that are in here. But first, let's start, if we could, by just kind of going back to the proposed budget. These are items that are already in the budget. They were smaller items, but I think the council would be interested in hearing that they are included in the proposed budget. So I'd first like to ask Carrie if she would just give a kind of an update on an area related to the Mesa Arts Center and what we're proposing to do there in the proposed budget. Carrie?
Thank you, Mayor and Council. Several months ago, you received a letter from the city's Museum and Cultural Advisory Board requesting some assistance for our resident companies at the Art Center. On the slide here are those companies that will be performing during the 2010-2011 Art Center season. They include Ballet Etudes, East Valley Children's Theater, Mesa Encore Theater, our Youth Symphony, Southwest Shakespeare, and Symphony of the Southwest. What we're proposing in our budget is what we're calling a $15,000 in-credit allocation for our resident companies. We looked at this allocation, and it was based on their percentage of the total revenues generated from all of these companies. When you do that percentage, the allocation per company ranges anywhere from about $1,350 to about $5,700. And what we approached the resident companies and asked them, if you had this credit, you have the ability to use it towards three things. Our companies get assessed a rental rate at the Art Center. They can apply their credit towards their bill for the rental rate. Two of the companies we actually build sets for, and then we bill them and they reimburse us, so they can apply that credit towards that bill. Or we can enhance their marketing through various print ads, PR through radio stations, window clings that we can put on the outside of our windows at the Art Center. So we approach those companies, and what they're doing right now is talking to their boards. They're very appreciative of utilizing that credit, and over the next month they'll be letting us know how they wish to apply that credit. It could be multiple ways. They may take their credit and apply some towards marketing, some towards their rent, but they'll let us know within the next month on how they're going to apply that. So that's how we're proposing to assist the resident companies next year.
And really the purpose for this is, with everybody else, and especially in the arts, they're struggling. So it's not as though we're giving up things. We're actually doing in-kind or redirecting, I would say, efforts into things that can help build them, because it's not like we're all these people are struggling to meet
exactly.
their bills anyway.
Exactly.
And, the reality is that every arts group is hanging on for dear life in many ways. Mm-hmm. And so I appreciate you getting creative in ways that can help them without cutting checks mm-hmm. and without
and the goal is to enhance their audiences
yeah.
and bring more people down to
the
downtown
is to
in
get
the community.
More people mm-hmm. Into the arts center, mm-hmm. make it a community arts center. So I appreciate that. Thank you. Councilmember Kavanaugh.
I also want to express my appreciation for their creativity in working with the groups on this, because this in-kind help will certainly help these groups leverage their resources, and hopefully the goal would be additional ticket sales, and obviously we benefit on that because there's a surcharge on every ticket sold at the Art Center that goes to programs that the city can use on behalf of the center. So I think this is an excellent way to continue that partnership, and I appreciate that. Thank you.
Councilmember
Richens. I know it's been a
Richens.
While.
I almost called you Fenter. I can't believe that.
You can call me Dave. It's fine. Everybody else does. How is the allocation per company determined?
We took the we basically looked at the total rental income that we get from the resident companies, and then took each of the companies what their percentage is. For example, there's two companies that about 9% of the revenue, and then allocated that 9% towards the $15,000. So we have one company that's 38% of the total revenue, and then we applied that, and so that's the $5,700 you see. So I presented that to the resident companies, and they seemed to be in agreement that they thought that was fair on how that was allocated.
And the great thing about an in-kind contribution is that these are activities that we're doing in our normal course of business. So it doesn't create additional burdens for us, and it does help these companies, which, as Councilmember Kavanaugh said, actually helps to benefit and increase cash flow without actually putting any drain on the general fund. So
exactly.
Appreciate that. Okay.
All right. So if we could turn to slide 4. If you council recall, in our presentation regarding the human services funding, that amount was not proposed to be changed from the prior year, but what we did propose is a partnership with Mesa United Way. Since we both fund and oversee contracts or services that are provided by many of our partner agencies that are the same, we had proposed working with the Mesa United Way to have them take over the administration of these contracts with these member partners. As council knows, there will be some significant change in leadership at Mesa United Way that was just recently announced. And really, we felt like that during this time of transition at Mesa United Way that we needed to delay the implementation of this significant program. Because we really felt like the leadership and the commitment that it was going to require on the United Way side was significant, and we wanted to make sure we were all on the same page moving forward. We want to thank Carol McCormack because she actually put a lot of work in it. She's already drafted up a lot of the white paper and the strategy of how this would be implemented. But I just felt like it would be more comfortable if we kind of maybe delayed this until the new leadership came on board. We could take the work that Carol has put in place and have those discussions maybe later in the year and maybe next year as we begin this process again. We can come back to council and have this conversation. But we would propose that we would continue this program as we have in the past. We would have a position that was previously being identified for elimination would continue to assist in as part of the responsibilities to administer this program. That position has other responsibilities in neighborhood services. But we would restore that so we would at least have the administrative support to oversee the contracts and the monitoring of these partner community partners. So that was also included in the proposed budget that was presented to council last week. And then if we'll go on from at this point as we move forward, these are outstanding issues. I'll just refer to them as outstanding issues that are being like to discuss today regarding the budget. The first one has to do with school resource officers. We were just recently noticed officially this week that the Mesa Public Schools was going to need to reduce their support for the school resource officers. Most of those school resource officers, or at least three of those school resource officers, just a lot easier to say SROs. Can I do that now?
Okay. Well, the rules are you can use an acronym after you define the acronym.
So school resource officers,
you have passed
bracket
the rule
SRO.
Now you can say SRO. It is acceptable.
Thank
now.
You. It's a lot easier.
It's A-okay to do that.
Thank you. The school district was reimbursing the city for the four officers an amount of approximately $335,000. And that share was then allowed us then we committed to been putting those SROs in the different middle schools and high schools. What we're proposing to do, since the schools, because of the challenges that they're also having in their budget and having to reduce their funding for this. And frankly, a lot of this funding comes from grants that I believe come through the state. And I'm not sure if it originates from the state of Arizona or if it comes from some other source. But I know that they're being cut back for these, is it a SAFER grant? Is that the right?
Safe Schools
Grant. Safe Schools Grants. Thank you. So what you know, we're proposing is we need to pick up this cost for these officers. We obviously don't intend to lay off any police officers. Now, what that means is that the police department will work with the school district to determine whether or not we'll continue to provide the SROs in these middle schools or not. Some of these middle schools, at least one of them, is closing. Others of the middle schools are, I'm not sure what their word is, restructuring, reprogramming. So now they, instead of having 7th, 8th, and 9th grade classes, they'll only have 7th and 8th grade classes. And so there's some discussion about the appropriate coverage as far as police officers and where they need to be. The police department is sitting down with Mesa Public Schools security to determine where would be the most appropriate. We have officers that are covering multiple schools, and so we'll continue to work through that. I know talking with the chief, he feels pretty strongly that we definitely need to have SROs in the high schools, so we'll maintain that presence. And then we'll evaluate how the coverage for the middle schools, again, depending on those that include the ninth grade or not. And the coverage may vary from that
point. And I think about half the junior highs are transitioning next year, where they'll eliminate the ninth graders, and then the other half in the following school year.
I think that sounds right. And so we'll work out that schedule. But just also, so as we adjust our budget to pick up that cost, they indicated to us that in the following year, they would expect that they also have to reduce their funding for another four school resource officers. And so we'll have to start building that into our budget forecast for the following year, that we'll have to pick up an additional four officers that we'll have to fund. So that doesn't impact this, but this fiscal year, this coming fiscal year, but it certainly will the next fiscal year. Also, as feedback received
Could we continue to have a discussion with them? Because I understand the schools get it from a grant. I also understand that it's certainly at the high school level, SROs are a joint benefit. They're community benefit, but they certainly benefit the schools all also. And I get it that everybody's under extreme budget crunches, but I think that based on what our police officers say, our police department says, and I think in the community, these officers being on campus, being integrated on campus, has very, very significant, tangible, positive benefits to our, I guess there wouldn't be a negative benefit, would there? Has a benefit to both the schools and us. And I was hoped that with given a year that we can both work together to not carry all the burden, but to find out a way where we can work with the schools to share that burden.
Yeah, no,
and
I
think, on the high school level.
Yeah, I definitely think that's part of the conversation. Okay, so the next issue that the feedback we received from council members has to do with the fire department's life safety program. While that program reduction results in a savings of $306,000, I think it's important to note that when we look at the volunteer hours, services, the programs that are supported by those 3.5 positions, it leverages over $500,000 in services to the community and a variety of different programs that the council, I think, is all familiar with. From CRT, the community response team, CRT, to helping out with bilingual services, to doing help. I think a lot of their work is after the incident and doing some helping with social service direction and helping people out after a significant emergency or incident. So one of the proposals is that we would look at how we could restore that program. And so with that, what I'd like to do is, or what I'd like to ask, if Mr. Raines could go and explain to us a little bit about where we are with the secondary property tax. As council, in the last, when we presented the proposed budget, We had talked about maintaining a tax bill that was slightly less than the previous years, and council asked us to look at what would we generate as far as revenues if we maintained the same tax bill for the average homeowner as we did in the initial year of the secondary property tax. And actually, this number has gotten better for us as a result of the lower than expected interest rates we received last week. So, Brian, could you review that with the council, please?
Thank you, Chris. As Chris mentioned, on May 19th, we had some exceptional rates that came in on our general obligation bonds, well, on all three of our sales, but the one that affects secondary property tax rates is general obligation bonds. What we saw were two major issues. One is the low overall interest rate. We had estimated somewhere closer to 5%, and they were under 4% on our actual sale. And the way we ended up structuring those bonds reduced our interest costs in the first year by about $200,000. So that helped us tremendously. The way Chuck and I look at our property tax rate is we look at it on an average basis over the life of the rate, so it doesn't bounce around a lot. We try to get to that, as we've talked about before, a fairly balanced and reliable rate from one year to the next. One of the issues that we've discussed in great detail has been the property tax bill. We believe the property tax bill for the average family home next year will be about $62.52. It was about $62.52 this year. When you adjust for the reduction in assessed valuation and plug back in now our requirements, we believe that that amount, retaining that tax bill at $62.52, really generates us about $540,000 more next year.
Let me correct you right there. It does not generate us $548,000 more. And I want to be very clear on this. You have additional revenue. Right. This is not additional revenue. The revenue is exactly the same as it is this year. So it does not not one penny more is going to be collected from Mesa taxpayers. We're saying is that we have, if I'm hearing you right, is we have $548,000 in debt service savings.
Correct.
That we are going to now apply to general fund.
So it's really the other side of the formula. It's not the revenue side of the formula.
It's not the revenue side.
It's the
now, I want to make that clear because I don't want people to think that their taxes are being raised.
Well, our expected cost of debt has been lowered by $548,000.
And what we've talked about before is adjusting our tax collections downward to meet that. And what we're saying now is what staff is proposing is that we leave the tax bill for the families the same. So they will once again, I can't repeat this enough, they'll be paying the same amount this year as they paid last year. There is no tax increase. There is no additional revenue. But what we would do is that we would take the benefits of those reduced costs, and we would, I'm assuming, I don't have the
then
next
we can apply it against
slide,
the existing debt. So our the new debt cost is less.
Right. We're just going to pay off existing debt. We're still going to use it to pay off debt because that's what you pay. That's what you use secondary property tax to do. You can't use it for operations.
Correct.
We're going to use it to pay off existing debt.
Correct.
We're going to use those savings to our benefit.
Right.
Okay.
Thank you, Mayor. Good correction.
Did I mention we're not collecting any additional revenue? Because I want to make sure that that's clear. I don't know if I made that point clear enough. All right.
And I almost messed you up on that. I apologize. But thank you for the correction. So that puts us in a better position. Again, we were very impressed and very pleased with those rates that we obtained last week. So with that, the next page is the adjustment summary. I don't know. Really, it's kind of self-explanatory. The two additional issues that Mr. Brady identified, both the release of the SRO requirements by Mesa Public Schools and our fire department's life safety program, provide a total additional cost for us of about $641,000. We talk about maintaining the existing estimated tax bill, produces additional revenues of about $548,000.
It does what?
I'm sorry. It gives us
it allows us to utilize the existing revenues to pay off.
And debt. I say this, I'm sorry, Mayor.
That is now being paid by the general fund.
Correct.
Okay. It's not additional revenue.
Oh, boy. So Yeah. Okay. And then we've talked a lot about equalization of the gas rate in Magma.
Yeah, I understand where you're coming from. I understand the four of us, when we go out and meet taxpayers, this is sort of a not a minor issue.
I know.
So it's somewhat of a big deal that we're not raising people's tax bills.
Right. We're able to pay off more of the outstanding
debt with the existing stable revenue stream.
It's just so unique that we have a city that pays its existing debt out of current general fund revenues. Yeah. And that's just what is very confusing.
We get it. We understand where that's coming from.
No, I'm just,
from
your so standpoint, we all understand why it's confusing.
I just want everyone
to
understand.
We need to be very
clear. We're going to have Mrs. Kent do the rest of this.
Thank you.
So we have the Magma gas rate equalization. Chuck and his staff have estimated about $100,000 in the next year. It may be a little higher, maybe lower. We'll just have to work through that.
So, Mayor and Council, on that one.
And I will give you, that is additional revenue.
That is additional revenue. That's
got one.
The rate where we're going to maintain the rate out in the Magma service area as close to the Southwest gas.
Right.
And Council's preliminarily, you'll be approving that formally next.
It'll be introduced next.
Okay. It's part of the package of utility rate increases.
And once again, that's because out in Magma, which is way outside the Mesa City limits, does not affect Mesa taxpayers. That's not why we're doing it. Those customers are actually paying a lower, in some cases, substantially lower amount than their neighbor who gets their gas from Southwest Gas is paying. And so what we're trying to do is simply to equalize those, which has been our overall philosophy for electric and gas, is to where we go are side by side with a public or non-governmental utilities such as SRP or Southwest Gas. We want to maintain those rates as equal as possible. Is that an accurate description?
Yeah, I mean, for that area, that certainly is. And we're trying, and we're giving you an estimate because, again, this is based on a commodity pricing over a year, and so we're being a little cautious. What we would say is let's budget for $100,000 now, and then we'll track it during the year. And if it's more, we'll come back to council and say, you know, we were conservative. It might be.
And to reiterate, here we actually are increasing, but we do have situations like with our electrical rates where we've actually reduced rates sometimes. And the idea is to create that balance and inequity so that it's fair for the proverbial person that lives across the street from somebody else, that they're paying about the same for their commodities as across the board, not have a discrepancy or disparity. Okay.
So, Mayor and Council, so that is the proposed adjustments to the these are the adjustments to the proposed budget that we would include if this council's interest, again, restoring the life safety program and the school resource, or at least funding the school resource officers, whether or not they continue to be school resource officers, not the the police department, the school district, will continue to have that conversation. But this is what we would propose to move forward with in the tentative budget that the council will take action on June 7th. So that's coming up very quickly. And then the final budget adoption with utility rates would be on the 21st. Then our fiscal year begins on July 1st. And the secondary property tax levy must be adopted, it looks like, on July 8th, which is one of the council's final meetings before we break till August. So we just want to bring that up today to council as some of the feedback we've received at this point, and we're really kind of getting to the end, and want to make sure we get, if there's any other feedback, we get that, but we're trying to settle in on the final budget.
So just to summarize, what we're saying is that we have two budget issues that both relate to public safety.
Correct.
And one relates to public safety in our schools. The other relates to fire department, public safety, life safety programs, and we can leverage. I think one of the directions we gave you was to look for in budgets decisions. Look for situations where we could truly leverage, and so by restoring $306,000, we actually get an additional $500,000 through the ability to maintain certain volunteer programs. That's what I'm hearing?
Yes, correct.
So we're investing through savings and through a bill equalization. We're saving, we're applying the $648,000 to the $641,000, but actually the net benefit is closer to $1 million.
Yes, correct.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Any questions? Councilmember Higgins.
I do still have another budget question.
Okay.
And I'm still concerned with the municipal security. There's 12 actual people being laid off in municipal security. I know we're going to try to help find them a spot within the city, and we have 12 actual people, not spots, in TeleServe that are leaving. And I just want to know if we can discuss bringing the two parking contracts that are currently being done that we outsource in the downtown center area in-house to try to keep some of those possibility of those municipal security jobs. And, you know, just to throw out the number, currently the contract's about $420,000.
Councilmember Kavanaugh.
I was just going to say that I think at least the issue is worth exploring as raised by Councilmember Higgins. I have an issue, I've had an issue, that, as you all know, with the conversion of municipal security to the private sources, and I would hope at least that staff would at least review what Councilmember Higgins is talking about, to look at the pros and cons and see whether there are any options that would be workable, or if they're not, to tell us why they wouldn't be. Thank you, Mayor.
So we'll be glad to do that. I think we can go back and see what those contracts are due to be executed here pretty soon. So we will need to bring that to council probably next Thursday and have that conversation. We will look at the labor cost differentials as well as, I guess, the job responsibilities and how they compare. And at the same
time...
Well,
if you could explain, I mean, we talk about parking contracts. Actually, as I understand, there's four or five actual right. separate contracts.
I think within some of those contracts are some sub...
Well, yeah. That's what, but the reason why they're subcontracts is because they're sub areas is because it's not just parking.
Right.
There's literally maintenance. There's all sorts of other things
sure.
that go into those services. And there's a reason why those are provided by DMA that go beyond just providing service. So you come back, I want to make sure that we contemplate and identify all the different ramifications of what on the surface appears to be a simple change, but I don't believe is. I believe there are things that go much deeper because of the overall nature of the service, who provides it, and what is accomplished by DMA providing that. So when you come back with that analysis, if you would include as best you can analysis of all those pertinent factors. Okay. Councilmember Higgins.
One other question. Is that a contract that you could do a monthly thing if you didn't have a decision for the whole year contract? Is that something you could just say, you know, we're going to go month to month until we make a decision on that?
You may be able to. I'd have to talk with them because I don't know. They've got personnel and the contracts that they have to execute. I would really hope that council could get this decision made next week so that we could.
Well, remember, the idea is also, and I appreciate the concern with people's jobs, but you're trading one person's jobs for another person's jobs. And so, I'd like to understand what that relates to, because if you replace this with this, it's not that these people just stay in place. So, once again, we're getting down, in my mind, into areas where we're dealing with specific positions and specific things, and I don't know. I just want to make sure we understand that.
Can I throw one more thing out?
You may throw as many things as you'd like out.
Thank you, Mayor. And the reason, I think I feel a responsibility to city employees, if possible, over outside contracts. So that's why I even brought this up. I just think that the city employees, to me, have a higher priority. They've dedicated work for the city for years. So if we can bring something back in-house that currently we contract out,
I understand that.
And that's so.
I think it's a valid question.
Two different.
Remember, the DMA is a creation of the city.
Yeah.
DMA is not this lone private company out there. The DMA is a mini city within a city. Is a creation of the city of Mesa, and basically the city council is the ultimate authority for downtown Mesa. And I think that the fact that it's called Downtown Mesa Association, I think in many ways gives people cause to misunderstand the true nature of that. Whether you like it or don't like it, it is a taxing district established under state law by the city of Mesa. And so, you know, I guess we could quibble over who works for whom, but at the end of the day, anyone with DMA is the ultimate responsibility of the city of Mesa, because they're our child, which is why we have to approve the final decisions as far as it relates to budget and assessments and things like that of DMA. So, Councilmember Richens.
I'd probably go the other way. I like privatizing as much as we can and having people outside of the city doing it. And that's no knock on our city employees, because I think they're all superstars. We have some amazing people that work at this city and have dedicated a lot to this city. And so I want to be perfectly clear that that's not a knock on them, but just in a from a philosophy standpoint, looking as much as we can do to interact our city services in the private sector, I think, is the American way of squeezing efficiencies. So anyway, that's my two cents.
And the DMA is sort of halfway. It's not purely private. It's not purely city. So and I think it's a valid question.
No, and that's fair. It's fair. We've got employees, and there's opportunities that can be reasonable. We'll bring back the analysis. And again, as I think the councilwoman was acknowledging, we're doing everything we can to help them and place them. And actually, I think in the next presentation by Mr. Raines, we're hoping that some additional positions will come available that will help us to retain more and more positions.
When we come back and give the presentation, yeah, let's make sure we understand the nature of all those contracts.
Absolutely.
The nature of the work done and the overall effect.
Yep.
and how it impacts
we'll bring that back.
Both city, the security, and the DMA employees
we'll
and operations. Okay. Oh, you're shifting chairs.
I'm just sliding over one, Mayor.
Okay.
I'm going to try see if I can get back on track on this one a little bit more.
And what the different chairs will
right. That was on. We're going to get that one out.
Get rid of that chair.
We'll
Brian, it's the blue shirt.
Yeah,
blue shirt. Not he's usually in a white shirt.
And I threw him off. It's his revenue shirt. He needs to be in his expenditure reduction shirt.
Okay, Mayor, Council, one of the issues we've been working on throughout this budget process, and I'm sorry, with me is Gary Manning, our Director of HR this morning, is looking at our way to reward and allow long-term employees who have a desire to leave the city with an opportunity to do so, but get some additional benefit in their exit from the city, but at the same time producing us some significant revenues. What we've looked at is the development of what we're calling a post-employment health benefit plan, wherein employees who are eligible for normal retirement, and right now we're looking only in the public safety arena, because that one we have approval on through their public safety personnel retirement system. We are looking at a way for them to exit the city and take with them a additional benefit that would be provided to them within 90 days of their exit that would provide for a way to pay for qualified medical expenses in a post-retirement arena, meaning that after they retired and they had qualifying doctor bills, prescriptions, insurance, things of that nature, they could utilize this account to pay for those issues up to a certain balance. That balance would be determined based on their amount of their available sick time that they have on time of retirement. Currently, when an employee retires from the city of Mesa, they are paid for all of their vacation time and half of their sick time. The other half of their sick time really comes back to the city, if you will, to oversimplify. But what this does, it would take that non-paid half, and it would provide that to the employee into this post-employment health benefit plan. Again, that is a benefit to the employee or the former employee at that point, as well as to the city, because what our determination is from the folks who are eligible for currently eligible for normal retirement, about 89 to 90% of those are currently at the highest point of their pay range. Employees that would be brought in to replace those would be significantly less, at least 20% to 30% less in cost. There would be some savings created for the city in terms of vacancy savings, if you will, by the time that those positions are vacant over the upcoming years. And we believe that those savings between the lower salary as well as the vacancy savings for that period that the position is not occupied more than outweigh, probably on a 2-to-1 basis, the value of the benefit that would be provided to the retiring employee. Again, right now we are looking just at public safety employees. We are still working with ASRS, the Arizona State Retirement System, that takes care of the civilian employees, if you will. What our concern is that we don't want to create an unfunded liability that we would get a future bill for from ASRS. So we're working very carefully to craft a program that would allow a similar type benefit but not create an unfunded liability for the city. As I stated in the report, there's approximately 196 eligible public safety individuals who are currently eligible for retirement, for normal retirement. We do not anticipate all of those to take advantage of such a program, probably in the range of maybe 10% to 20%. They have other issues that they need to weigh in terms of their drop program and other benefits and their time and rank and things of that nature, a lot of personal decisions that they have to make on retirement. But this would, again, provide somebody a window if they were to leave. What we are looking at is
How long would that window be open?
Right now we're looking that individuals would have to exit the city by August 1st. Okay. So it's about 60
pretty
days.
Short window.
It's a pretty short window.
Very, yeah.
And that's our plan. It would be a short window of opportunity for employees to take
those
advantage
people
of
who are already on, they're on the cusp anyway.
And they're eligible for retirement.
They're eligible.
Right.
So in this market right now, it's meant to maybe nudge those that are eligible to go that probably would still hang around. And what we're trying to do is say, hey, listen, if you need a little nudge, that's great. Go on in here. We'll provide this benefit. And we still can achieve these savings.
Right.
It's not like we're trying to wash people out. It's just that, hey, listen, you're right on the cusp. You're eligible. It's basically a cost savings type of a
right. And the way to look at it is we're willing to offer up what we would call a one-time benefit cost to the city.
Right.
Put it up there in exchange for we will get at least a multiple year
benefit.
It won't go on forever, but eventually those employees that replace those employees will eventually over time get to that top of the range. But that will take some time for that to happen. So we do trade off a very short-term cost, and we believe we get a mid-range savings benefit as a result of that. And I think it'll ultimately have great benefit. It'll have benefit to the city overall. So we see that trade-off as being something that's worthwhile.
At the levels we're at, you know, people have been prepared to move up in the normal mm-hmm. advancement and promotion and expansion duties. So it's not like we're going to create this huge gap of things. We have people that are qualified and ready to step in, and it gives them an opportunity also. Councilmember Higgins.
You said a couple things, and I don't get how they relate to each other. How does the, since we already said, public safety retirement system and the AASRS, how do those relate? Why do they have to be approved, or why do they have to approve this stuff?
The discussions with them to make sure that we do not create what they call an unfunded liability, meaning that we're putting more of a burden on the retirement system than would otherwise naturally occur by individuals retiring out of their system, meaning that I am encouraging somebody to go before their normal date. Since these folks are eligible for normal retirement, they've already reached their 20 years of service for public safety, they would not create an additional pension liability. Many of them are already in drop.
And Brian, we may want to explain what's happened to other cities who actually offered early retirement. See what happens is that if let's say your retirement age, and I'll just throw out, in, let's say it's 55, 60, whatever it is. Let's say it's 60, be safe. So let's say normal retirement was 60. There were cities around the valley who offered someone 55 the right to early retire, and they cut them a check and said, retire 5 years early, we'll give you $5,000. Well, if you retire at 55 instead of 60, you got five more years of benefits. which puts a burden on the retirement system.
Because, Mayor, they look at it as they're getting five less years of that employee contributing into that plan.
That's right. Well, and they're paying 5 years more.
It's a combination. Yeah, exactly. Well,
what happened is that the city got a great deal because they cut a $5,000 check to get these employees to basically shift the burden to the retirement system. Well, the retirement system did a few little calculations and came back and said, well, thank you, city, for passing the burden on to us. Guess what? You just cost us an extra $10,000 for that employee, and they billed the city back, and there was more than one city. And I'm explaining this to make sure I understand it. Is that explanation pretty straightforward?
That's why we've already received word back from PSPRS that this program, as we've outlined it, they would not see it as creating an
additional... Because they're already eligible for retirement.
Right.
They could retire tomorrow.
Right. And while that same rule... And our proposal applies under the civilian retirement system. What their actuarial, the calculates the cost may assume something more than just the minimum eligible retirement age. It may be actually longer than that. And so we're working with them to see what impact there might
be. And the reason for that is that we have a point in time where employees are eligible for retirement, but we don't have mandatory retirement. And so there's that window in there. And let's say it's 55 to 60. I don't know what it is, but let's just say where they might be eligible for retirement at 55. We don't require them to retire until 60. Anytime in that 5 years, they could retire. Mm-hmm. The question is, does the retirement system assume actuarially that they will retire at 57 or 59? Or how do they calculate? Is that what you're talking about?
Actually, Mayor and Council, there are two ways that an unfunded liability can be created. One is if through the incentive payout that an employer may give an employee that's retiring, if that incentive payout is calculated in the pension and the pension is actually higher than what it ordinarily would have been.
Okay, so it's added to the salary.
Were it not for that incentive pay, then you've got that difference that has to be paid by the employer.
So in other words, the employee makes $60,000. That's what would normally go into their calculation for their pension. We cut them a $3,000 check, and all of a sudden that pay goes up to $63,000, which then is spread out over the life of the pension.
If that incentive money is calculated as part of the pension payment and their pension is now higher as a result of that incentive, that's the first part of an unfunded liability. The other type of unfunded liability is the one that we're talking about potentially here with ASRS, because this program will have no impact on their pensions at all. It's not part of a payment to them. The employee is not receiving the payment. That's being placed into a tax-deferred account.
And as of right now, employees have sick time that they're, by retiring, they're walking away from. So it's not like it's an added thing, because if they stayed here, they'd be eligible to use that sick time.
Right. So the other unfunded liability that ASRS is talking to us about is their actuaries will tell us that even though they're eligible for retirement, their actuaries say, you may have reached your 80 points, but they don't ordinarily go the minute they reach 80 points. They usually stay 3 or 4 years. So if as a result of this program they leave earlier than what their actuaries say they ordinarily would have left, now there's a series of pension payments that ASRS is providing that they ordinarily wouldn't have. That's the unfunded liability that we have to be careful about and that ASRS is trying to provide us some information on. And the difference between ASRS and PSPRS is ASRS has a law that went into effect, I think, sometime last year, that basically says anything of value in the statute itself, it says anything of value that the employer provides to the employee that is conditional upon them separating, that really is considered either through an increase in pension or an increase because they're receiving more pension payments. But that really is what constitutes the unfunded liability. But with PSPRS, we've contacted them directly. They're not influenced by that particular statute, and they think the program is fine.
Councilman Higgins?
So with what you're describing, ASRS really doesn't have anything to do with it, right? Because we're just talking public safety.
Correct.
Today.
But if we go on to the next step, then we need ASRS's buy-in.
Our hope is to come back to you and say, we've talked to ASRS, they've calculated this, and we've built it into our estimates, and we still think it's either viable or not.
We were hoping to roll both of the programs out together, but we've had to spend more time with the ASRS. But because the public safety retirement system has responded to us timely. We just felt like, let's go ahead and move forward with that one now, so we can, because that one's good to go, and it obviously still realizes a benefit to the city. We're hoping to hear maybe later today, this week, whatever,
yeah.
And we may come back and say, and I guess what we'd tell council is, if we get the permission from ASRS and there is not a significant impact to our cost of the city, we'd like to move forward with that. But we really just felt like we've got one of the approvals, one of the pension systems. Let's present it to the council so we can start letting the employees know and moving forward with that program.
And so the question of ASRS is whether our funding something that the employee has already earned, meaning vacation time, but they would forego by retiring, whether that's something of value.
That's part of it. Probably the more significant one, Mayor, is do they believe that, and we gave them the list of all the eligible employees and where they are in time, and what they're looking at that and saying, well, is that employee retiring sooner than what we had put in our actuarial as far as, even though they're eligible, but maybe we had actuarially said they were still going to be there another 2 years.
And that's, 80 points, but most people don't understand how that works. That's why I said the 55 versus 60.
Right.
If they assume that anyone who's eligible for retirement at 55, and I know it's different than that because you get the 80 points, but I want to do it so we can understand it. 55, and the state retirement system assumes in all their actuarial that everyone's going to retire at age 57 and 4 months, and they're now retiring at age 56. It's that 1 year and 4 months difference that they haven't contemplated in their actuarial.
That's right. Correct. That's what they're looking at.
Okay.
Does this affect the drop people, or they're already dropped, or they're dropping, so it doesn't? They don't have the ability to do this, too?
They would have the ability to do this. They're enrolled in the drop program. It's a personal decision they're going to have to make, whether they want to exit drop early.
We have those in public safety who may be in drop, but then even today may decide to retire under normal retirement. They can choose to come out of drop if they wish.
Early. Okay.
Councilman Kavanaugh.
Thank you. If we achieve the savings that are described here, is this something that you would consider perhaps to restore a couple of positions in the fire department with the arson investigators, or were those already put back in?
I think it's a good conversation, Council. Frankly, I think our priority right now is to get back to all the, I'm assuming we're going to be able to do this citywide, okay? And so we would look to either restoring the 2%, or also we know that in the public safety side there's a strong interest on restoring the merit pay. So we'd ask maybe for council to consider that as an option, but maybe that's a discussion we can have once we see what the response is going to be. We really kind of have to put this program out there. Once we have, like Mr. Raines is saying, once we have, we'll have a short window, and then we'll know, we'll be able to calculate the savings and come back to council and tell you what that might be. And remember, though, it does have it starts out higher and then it kind of diminishes over time, but I still think there will be significant savings for the city.
Any other questions?
Okay, I think that covers
All
of item one.
That's it?
Yep, thank you.
Thank you. Item two, acknowledge minutes of various boards and committees. Have a motion from Councilmember Higgins.
Second.
Second from Councilmember Kavanaugh. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Hear reports on meetings and conferences attended. Councilmember Kavanaugh.
I attended earlier this week the opening of a new business at the Broadway and Dobson old Motorola site, the Braun Corporation, which is a major company in the United States producing products for people with disabilities. Has opened its first distribution and warehouse and supply center west of the Mississippi, and they provide some really significant products, particularly products for van conversions to allow people to maintain their mobility and independence. They've also worked on a lot of products that motorized chairs and other things for people with disabilities, and it's an excellent corporation that is bringing good jobs to the city, and I offered our congratulations to them for moving to Mesa.
Good. Thank you. Councilmember Higgins.
I had two fun events I attended. Last Saturday night was the Desert Challenge Games, which were at Red Mountain High School, brought disabled athletes from all over the country to track and field events. It was very, very fun. And last night, I had the honor of throwing out the first pitch, as pathetic as it was a bad pitch, at the WAC baseball tournament, which is going on. See, my WAC shirt. I had to bring my props. Yesterday, today, tomorrow, and basically through the 30th, which is, what day is the 30th? Sunday,
yeah.
And just so you know, the WAC league includes Fresno State that won the NCAA Division I championship a couple of years ago. So this is good baseball, all happening right in Dave's district at Hohokam. So go on out and watch great baseball. It's really, really fun.
So we have a wacky tournament.
We have a wacky tournament.
And you are our wacky representative. Teeny little boys.
No, big, huge.
Oh, big, huge boys like sitting.
Walls
teeny
walls walking.
Walls.
Yeah, walls walking.
Oh, well.
And then there's pathetic people like us throwing balls out like girls.
You're saying you throw like a girl?
I threw like a girl.
You are a girl.
It was very, very.
But that's okay. Thank you for being there. And that tournament continues on through Sunday.
Yes.
Well, maybe Sunday.
Right.
No, the 30th, correct?
First
the 30th, yes. Whatever day is the 30th is.
That's Sunday.
Okay. It's a minimum two games a day, 4:30 and like 7.
So good. 4:30. And it's even great weather, too. So, anything else? Mr. Brady.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a reminder to the council, we have a study session next Thursday, June 3rd, and then we have our council meeting June 7th. That will be followed by a Community Neighborhood Services Committee meeting at 3:30. Also want to remind the council, remind the council that we have several zoning code update workshops where we're going out into the neighborhoods across the city over the next 30 days. We'll be at a variety of different locations that are representative for each district, and most of those community meetings will be held at our fire stations or police substations in their community room. So we invite our community to come out and get informed on what's happening with the zoning code update. All that information's been out in the newspapers, and we have it up on our website. Also want to congratulate our Fleet Services Division. I don't know if everybody knows this, there's 38,000 governmental fleets in the U.S. Of those 38,000, 100 were recognized as the best fleets in the country by Government Fleet Expo, of which we are one. And we'll, so that's good. Pretty significant to be 100 out of 38,000. And we'll find out maybe if we make the top 20. They're narrowing the 100 down to the top 20, so we'll see how that works out. So congratulations to Pete and his staff out of Fleet Services for the great
that's
work
great.
They do.
Great
Thank
accomplishment.
You.
Thank you. Councilmember Higgins.
Yeah, and one more thing, Mayor, is to wish Councilmember Kavanaugh a belated birthday. Happy birthday last Tuesday.
I continue to be the oldest person on the council.
Yeah, no, we don't.
That he
that.
Is. That he is. And we're glad that you should be glad that we recognize it belatedly, because we don't sing belatedly.
No.
We sing prospectively.
And I appreciate that.
Next year, this is a fact that shall not pass us by. Next item on the agenda is items from citizens present. We have one request to speak from Mr. Matt Tolman. Mr. Tolman. Matt, you have 3 minutes. Please, have a
Good morning,
seat.
Mayor and council members. And Dina Higgins, anybody bigger than me is a wall, so don't worry about that. The reason I come here this morning is just because that early in January I purchased a business which happened to fall within the downtown Mesa Association area. Unbeknownst to me at the time, until I found a little flyer under my door asking what my opinion of the association was. And I realized that contracts are coming up here in June, you're negotiating and so forth, and that the Downtown Association is a child of the city of Mesa. I've gotten involved with the downtown merchants, trying to understand what they're going through, trying to find out how I might be a part of that, improve my business as well as improve the downtown. And I've come up with some concerns that have surfaced, and that is that really the Downtown Association is not supporting the merchants. Maybe it's the merchants who are doing the motorcycles on Main, doing the second night on Friday, getting ready to add the cars on the third Friday and so forth. As things come to a renewal period here for that contract with the association and the funding and so forth, I as a merchant pay tax. I would like to see the tax dollars I pay to the landlord that's then transferred to the Association used to benefit the downtown merchants, not just for one large event throughout the year, but on a regular basis. I've heard of things where the second Friday night's out, $500 budget for whatever else. I mean, you look at the last event that went on second Friday night, it was a huge event, over 75 vendors there, VWs, all sorts of things. They did all that with $2,600 they saved up for the whole entire year. You take a look at, and I'm not pointing fingers, but you take a look at the MacFest that went on. Over $11,000 that they spent for that. How many vendors did they have there that were there? 12, 11 that participated? It seems a little out of kittywalkers here to spend that kind of money, but yet have the merchants who put on these events, which draw their business downtown, to get so little of the support and assistance from the DMA. So as you go forward here, I would just recommend, it's a child of the city of Mesa, let's help the merchants downtown, because I was surprised the last meeting I went to that there are probably five or six merchants who are about ready to close their doors because they don't have the traffic that they need to stay open. You know, a couple of them were actually surprising to me. So I would just hope that you would look, finding ways to make sure the DMA supports the merchants and not be told by, I mean, this is the wrong place to say this, but the new interim director there, she's coming to comment to the merchants, we're closed at 5 o'clock. Sorry, you're not getting our support on Friday nights out in the Friday night events. And that is a little disheartening to me, because their responsibility, as I see it, is to support the downtown area and the downtown community and make sure that the events things roll smoothly and that funding, when they need for it, is there for them to do their things. That's what I have to say. Thank you, members.
Thank you, Matt. Appreciate it. Are there any other requests to speak?
No additional
Crocker? Requests. Okay. I'll entertain a motion to move into executive session. I have a motion from Councilmember Richens, a second from Councilmember Higgins. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? We'll move into executive session.